Hello and welcome to Unfrozen. I'm Dan Safarik and this is Greg Lindsay.
Hello, sir.
And our guest today is Bjorn Rosen from DOM, D-O-M Publishers in Germany, which is the publisher of a series of architectural guides that we'll be discussing today. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi there. Great to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
So I came across the DOM guides through the very astute work of publicist Gisela Graf, who has been dutifully sending me many review copies for my my work here at my day job at the Council on Tall Buildings, where we have a journal in which we do book reviews. But, you know, there's so many books and they're so rich and they're full of so much information that I thought, let's try to give them a little bit more exposure in this podcast format if we can. So for those who are uninitiated, there is a series of now 131 guides to urban architecture. Well, actually not just urban, we'll get into that, which are released basically under the premise of being by architects and for architects. And I guess that's what I'd like to sort of unpack first, which is, you know, what was the impetus behind creating this series? And, you know, did you feel that there was a sort of a gap to be filled between, you know, your typical tourist guide and the sort of more hefty and obtuse architecture texts that tend to be physically large, not a convenient travel format? But, you know, is it some sort of compromise between the traditional guidebook and the architecture tome?
I might have to say first that the architectural guides are not the only books, not the only series that we produce at our publishing house. So there are also manuals, handbooks for architects, right? How to build a practice for a doctor, or how to build a hotel building, for example. And we have also a series called Basics on Architectural Theory and History. But the architectural guides are most certainly our most popular series, so very well known. And even though you're right, our claim is books made by architects, and our customers or the readers are, I would say, predominantly people into architecture. This is a series that also speaks to a broader public, I'd say. So you don't have to be an expert to read these books, to appreciate these books, to travel with these books. And well, coming to your question, or to the core of your question, this kind of format, I'm not sure about the United States, but talking about Germany, this kind of format has quite a history in Germany or in Europe. So architectural guides like this exist since decades. Their roots go back to the 19th century. With our format, you're right. It's kind of a compromise between having, let's say, a nice coffee table book with a lot of big pictures, big photos, showing the buildings of a certain place, and having a handy guide with all the, you know, useful information that you would need to really go there and see the place by yourself.
Fascinating. Yes. Well, you know, it would be interesting because we, before the call started, we were discussing, you know, there are seemingly very few architecture guides series of this type. We could think only of the AIA guides, which are, you know, issued by the American Institute of Architects. And even those, as far as we know, I've only ever seen them issued from New York and Chicago. There may be other cities. They're usually done by the local chapters, but I don't know if anything else as comprehensive as this.
Yeah. I think I think we have the most comprehensive series. I'm pretty sure of that. In case there's another publisher somewhere in the world who has done more books like this or a more comprehensive series, feel free to email me. Feel free to contact me. But I think it's the most comprehensive series of this kind. You're right.
Well, I should mention for the for the listeners that we're covering not only prominent European cities as you might expect, but also places like sub-Saharan Africa and I believe the moon. Is that right?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's the first extraterrestrial book we've made. Maybe if you allow me, I'd say a word or two about the history of our publishing house, because some of these books that some of these topics that you might consider a little bit niche are closely related with the history of our publishing house. So it was founded in 2005, more than 15, well, 16 years ago now. And especially in the beginning, we had a clear focus on, let's say, Eurasia or the countries of Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. And therefore, we started not only with, well, we actually started with an architectural guide on Berlin. But soon there was also an architectural guide on Moscow, which I still think is one of our best books we've ever made. And we also have really books on places like Astana or like Dushanbe, so in Central Asia. We have, for example, an architectural guide on art for architecture in Ukraine. We might can talk about this sub-series later on. So books about places that are usually not covered by other publishing houses, by other series.
Yes, I think you definitely fulfilled that. And even within, even the guides that you have produced with respect to more traditional cities that get more visitors, architectural or otherwise, there's a particular take that is unconventional. For example, Greg and I actually started the podcast in Venice, and the Architecture Guide to Venice, published by your house, is predominantly focused on modern architecture, interventions, things like Rem Koolhaas's institute and the Tado Andō theater, for example. So that's interesting. That's the kind of thing that most tourists don't come there to see. And then even in something like London, you're focused exclusively on housing, which is, of course, a real inflection point of crisis for the city, as well, in the contemporary sense. As well as, something that has a long history, at least in the post-war idiom. So, I guess I'm curious about what is the angle of approach? Why have you chosen to look at these areas, these cities specifically, and to venture into territories unknown, shall we say?
Right. So our first focus, as I just mentioned, as I just explained, was the architecture of the former East, Soviet modernism, you could call it maybe. And our second focus clearly is on modern and contemporary architecture. Therefore, you will find many of our books with buildings from the 20th century or from contemporary times. This is true also, for example, for our architectural guide on Paris, which only covers the 20th century. Unfortunately, it has not been published so far in English, only in French and German. But that's really part of our philosophy. And well, one of the reason is we, of course, try to produce books that fill a gap, right? So it's easy to find a book, I guess, on architecture in Venice from the pre-modern times, but it might not be so easy to find a book that covers buildings from 1950 until today. And that's one of the reasons. Another reason is our idea that the authors of the books are kind of curators. So, of course, we, you know, talk with them concerning the whole structure of the book, the whole idea behind the book. But they have, quite a great autonomy on what they do, on which buildings they choose. It's really also their book. And if they are specialized in modern or contemporary architecture, if that is, you know, the topic they are really well informed about, then they will focus on that. And that was also the idea, or rather the story behind the architectural guide on London. So the author, Tjerk Rümschotel, who is actually a Dutchman, is kind of specialized on the topic of 20th century housing projects in London. So that was the reason he approached us with that particular idea. And again, like with Venice, I guess it's pretty easy to find books on architecture in London. There will be a great variety, but try to find one particularly about this topic with this clear focus won't be so easy. So we decided to do it with that particular angle.
And I was curious also how you went about selecting the authors, or what the process is for bringing the authors into your publishing realm. They seem to come from all corners, and of course, you know, there are almost as many authors as there are guides. I don't know if two of them are written by the same person.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There are some by the same person, but yeah, we have almost as many authors as we have books. I shall say that we, over the years, published even more than 130 titles. So some of them are out of print. There are, you know, overall more than 150. First of all, we are, of course, looking for architects. So a great number of authors are architects themselves, but also journalists and people, you know, coming from all different strains of life. So we are not, to put it differently, you are not obligated to be an architect to publish a book with us, or to publish an architectural guide with us. The most important thing for us is that you really know a place very well. So it's not enough to go there, you know, once, twice, and then write a book about it. You have to have a deeper connection to a place. You really have to know what you are talking about, or in that case, what you are writing about. And over the years, you know, as this series became more and more popular, more and more people are approaching us with their own ideas. They are saying, oh, well, I had a look into your publishing program, and apparently there's no book about place XYZ. Why don't you have a look onto my expose? I'd be interested to do a guidebook on this or that place. And that works pretty well. So I think we kind of built a real community over the years. And particularly because we are so specialized, take the example of art for architecture. I might have to say a little bit more about this topic. We started a couple of years ago with a guy from Eastern Germany, who was documenting art for architecture from the socialist times, from the GDR, the former German Democratic Republic, mostly mosaics, you know, on public buildings, and for the most part neglected. He did a book with us on this particular topic, which is, you know, which seemed to be completely niche, but it was quite a great success. And starting from that very book, we established kind of a new sub-series, which is called Art for Architecture. And we published, as I already mentioned, a book about Ukraine, about Georgia, for example. Now we might publish a book on socialist art for architecture in Poland. We might publish a book on Azerbaijan. So this is how it often works with our projects with our books. There's kind of an initial book that starts everything, and then the others follow.
And that definitely seems like you've got a very good momentum going there. I mean, certainly tapping into there's an enormous fascination, I think, in the global architecture community with the architecture of the former Soviet Union. I think on one hand, there's a little bit of a, shall we say, fetishistic fascination, and some people even refer to it as disaster porn. I'm making scare quotes, in the idea that look at this collapsed empire on the relics, but really so much of that work is quite inspired. And I believe Greg might have a question about that.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So Bjorn, I've read the books themselves. Dan jealously guarded them when he was playing tour guide for us in Venice. But I am curious. I mean, mentioning the GDPR, mentioned British housing. I mean, lurking behind this is the whole question of the politics of writing such guides today. You know, I remember reading vintage copies of the AIA guide around New York, which sort of course, carries like implicit American, post-war modernism and financialism. I just remember like entries in the various bank buildings. But how do you approach the politics of it? I mean, architecture has been rocked in recent years by a sort of, rediscovery of the political dimension, but certainly moving up beyond just like descriptions of form, shape, etc. Like I think, for example, like the reviews of Su Fujimoto's new building in Budapest, I believe it's the Music Hall, Dan. Almost all of the discussions of it were, was he willing and aiding the Orban regime, for example? I mean, I know that's a contemporary question, but I am curious, do you give the authors then free rein to delve into some of the politics of this? Or how do you embed a political dimension, an editorial view in all of these? It seems like it's impossible to do if you're writing about the GDPR. There has to be like some discussion about that, or particularly about the decline of UK, housing council estates, et cetera. So how do you deal with that as an editor in a series?
Yes, you're right. There's also quite a lot of autonomy for the authors. So there's no clear editorial line on that. Again, we discuss, of course, certain topics, but we don't have an overall policy for the architectural guides when it comes to the political or societal background of architecture.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely sense the autonomy and the ability of the authors to kind of take their own tack on things. The introductions to these books are highly dissimilar, and actually, part really kind of the most fascinating part in some ways, because you get the author's framing right out of the gate, and you understand where the book is going to take you, not necessarily geographically, but philosophically, where it's going to go and what the author's bent is, which I think is truly great.
Right. If I may jump in here, that's exactly that. So I think the beauty of this series, but not only of this series, is that the books look at first glance all pretty much alike. So one typical critique that I sometimes get, not so much from architects, but from, let's say, ordinary non-architectural people, is that the books kind of look dull, even though they are very colorful, but they have all basically the same layout, the same design, right? But then the content can really be very different. So this kind of variety, this kind of diversity, I think, could summarize our approach.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I can't tell you how much I enjoy looking at the array of bright colors on my bookshelf, and I have them all organized alphabetically and in a spray of rainbow colors. And yeah, it is the color of the cladding and the standardization and the approach completely elides the utter difference in approach within each guide. And I think that's one of the great secrets of it, really, to sort of uncover. So while we're on the subject of qualms that people tend to have with the guides, of which I have very few, but one that I would say is that as something that you are traveling with and carrying around with you, perhaps under inclement weather or difficult circumstances, you know, you've got these beautiful spreads, and each one has a QR code, which you can scan, which will tell you on Google Maps where the project is located. Have you given any thought to developing an app or doing something to make it more digitally portable?
Right. You are not the only one. I have to be frank. I have to be honest with you. This question pops up pretty often during the last couple of years, and it's easy to see why, right? So all of us are using smartphones nowadays, using apps, and are kind of used to this easy handling of things, having everything in your phone instead of, you know, having books. But we, as a publisher, so far, pretty much old school, and we take pride and pleasure in it. So we really love books, and books means printed paper. And it would be quite tough, I think, to transfer this into a really consistent, for example, application, especially because the books are quite diverse in the inside, as I just mentioned. So we are not such a big company, and so far we try to focus on the things we are really good at, we really like to do, and these are printed books. But that being said, I can of course understand this idea or this this wish, you know, to have something for the digital age. We go a little bit against the tide here, but you know, we did the same thing when we started 15 years or 16 years ago with books on architecture in the East. So and nowadays a lot of people are doing it. So maybe this kind of retro of looking at things with a little retro perspective gets more popular during the coming years.
I have no reason to expect that it wouldn't become more popular. I mean, I think you've really got a strong brand there. And I think the kind of person who would purchase these books probably is going to be somewhat enterprising in their approach to tourism anyway. So, for example, you know, it's small enough that you can take it on the trip with you. Perhaps you don't want to have it at your side as you're squeezing between, you know, monuments, in the alleyways of Venice, to use the most prosaic example. But, you know, that same person is very likely to have relaxed with the book and had a session with the book and taken pictures of the QR codes that map where they need to go. And they already know why they're going there. You know, they just need to know how to navigate. And I think you've split that difference quite nicely. But yes, I would expect that you would get that question a lot.
I have to say, though, that of course we try to keep the books as light as possible. So if you have a look onto the paper, usually the books are not too heavy, I shall say. But again, I get the question. I get the wish. Try to look at it like this. At the beginning, we said that these books are really located in between like a nice coffee table book and like a very, very lightweight guidebook with, you know, only the essential, most essential information. You could, of course, take this book with you onto a journey, but you can also read it in your armchair. And among the places that we cover with the series, there are, of course, some that you cannot easily or might never visit. For example, Pyongyang, so the capital of North Korea, we have it in the series. There are even, two books on it. The architectural guide consists of two books. And that's, of course, a place that most people will never visit. But you can go there using the pictures in the book and your imagination and get all the information without having to catch a plane to Pyongyang.
Right. That might be a journey from which you don't return if you make a misstep.
So, exactly.
Yeah. Definitely. The kind of guide. Well, and of course the moon, you know, unless you are friends right. with Elon Musk or you have $200,000 handy, it's pretty unlikely you're going to be doing that trip either. But yes, you want to go on that journey of discovery, which of course is the premise of books in the first place. And I completely understand the sanctity of the publishing mindset. So after an undertaking like this, you know, which isn't to suggest that it's over, obviously you've started a series and you want to build up as much, you know, as many cities as you can, but what's sort of the next big project for your publishing house?
At the moment, we continue this series, and there are enough places left so far, enough cities, enough countries even left that are not yet covered with the Dom Publishers architectural guide. You mentioned the architectural guide on sub-Saharan Africa. I need to say that this has been published recently, and it was a huge project. It consists of 7 volumes. Different volumes for different regions of the continent, of course. It took us years and years to do the research. There are 350 authors involved, so you can imagine it was quite a lot of work. After that, you know, that was like a real beacon project. This year and the next year, we will continue, let's say, normally with, for example, guidebooks on Cairo in English language, on Izmir in Turkey. We will have a guidebook later this year on Tirana, the capital of Albania. But also, I should say, with the COVID crisis, and the, well, economic turmoil in the wake of the COVID crisis, we now tend to focus more on places that are close to us, I mean, in a geographical sense. So we started in 2020, actually, immediately in March and April, we started to push some projects on architectural guides on German cities. And on cities in neighboring countries. To give you an example, so we published an architectural guide on Cologne, unfortunately only in German, so I won't say too much about it, but also there will be one on Salzburg in Austria later this year, and on the Rhein-Neckar region in Germany next year. So this was kind of a shift, you know, after covering New York, California, Tokyo, Pyongyang, different regions of Africa. We now returned a little bit, at least, to our geographical roots, if I may say that in English.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's quite a pivot, because I would think that the premise is largely, you know, taking people to places far afield from their normal course, but it's at the same time, you know, I guess you could make a larger metaphor about the way that COVID forced people to rediscover their own neighborhoods, you know, in the extreme proximate sense of going out into the street and, you know, meeting their neighbors and dining outside where ordinarily they might not have. All those kinds of interventions that we saw, in which, you know, some people hope we continue with, that make cities more habitable. I suppose that will spawn a whole new way of looking at cities and of writing guides about them.
Right, exactly. And again, we are continuing also with the architectural guides on foreign or, from a German perspective, more exotic places. But we have these new regional guides, and there's also one guide that sticks out a little bit in this series. It's called the Architekturführer Deutschland, so the Architectural Guide Germany, and it is published, contrary to all the other books, it's published on a regular basis, so every year. And it presents the long list of a prize, which is called Damm Prize for Architecture in Germany. It's actually a prize given by the German Architectural Museum in Frankfurt, Deutsches Architekturmuseum in German. And this also is, well, this book and the projects in this book and the texts in this book also cover a little bit what you just mentioned. So reactions to current events and covering, you know, the latest trends in architecture, really. So may it be protecting the environment, right? Or may it be answering the questions, how do people live together in the future? So you might have new typologies popping up due to societal changes. So this is kind of a special book in this series. It also looks like all the others do, you know, with the same strict standardized layout. But it has kind of a different concept.
Well, it sounds like you've made some really proximate adjustments, and that belies the stereotype about, you know, publishers, book publishers in particular, that they, you know, it takes so long to publish a book and there's such a long process involved. But for a small organization, you know, you've been seemingly very responsive to very rapidly changing conditions. So that's quite remarkable in and of itself.
Thank you. I should add one thing. I now mentioned a couple of books that are only published in German. This is also kind of a peculiar thing about our books. Most of them are actually in German. A lot of them are also in English, but of course we publish books in French. We also had books published in Spanish, for example. It's quite diverse. Again, you have this diversity, this variety again that I already mentioned concerning the content or the autonomy that the authors have. So in this colorful box, you will find plenty of different things.
Well, I would definitely recommend people checking out this colorful box and rummaging through it and coming across all kinds of unexpected discoveries. I really want to thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.